think we'll go ahead and get started. We'll do a quick introduction. We will tell you who we are. What I think we're going to start with is a little overview of the Aereo case, just to tell you what was and was not part of the Supreme Court case. It's more narrow than sometimes people think it was. And then if y'all have anything else to chime in with, we will listen to what they have to say, and then we will have some discussion with you guys to find out what you think is interesting or troubling about it in general. I'm Courtney Lytle. I'm local. I'm an attorney working about part-time these days and teaching part-time at Emory Law School. I've written a textbook, which none of you have read because it's a textbook and it's boring. But I've been teaching IP law for ages and ages. I do transactional work as opposed to litigation, so I'm the one trying to keep my clients out of trouble rather than get them out of trouble, which is more his job. So that's me. Christina.
Hi, I'm Christina Mulligan. I'm a professor at Brooklyn Law School in New York, but I used to live down here in Georgia, and I teach intellectual property law and internet and technology law.
I don't teach anything.
He's a real lawyer.
I'm TJ Myhill. I'm an attorney here in Atlanta, and I practice in intellectual property. As Courtney said, I handle the litigation aspect on a lot of it. So when people are infringing or accused of infringing or want to stop someone from infringing, that's what I do day in, day out. So I do copyrights, trademarks, and technology law from a litigation perspective.
Okay, the case. Aereo is, I guess, still technically a company with a clever business idea. They, looking at how they set their technology up, in my mind it's fairly clear they had a whole bunch of lawyers trying to help them figure out how it might be legal. Turns out they were wrong. Aereo basically, and now the tech I can be corrected on very easily, I suspect, instead of doing one, you know, Napster-style central server, they have individual little antenna, which one of them can be yours, your very own little antenna, and they basically rebroadcast over-the-air network broadcasting, not cable, but the over-the-air broadcast stuff. And then they would, through your own personal antenna, you basically have a DVR that you use how you want. You can watch it on various devices, or you can record it and watch it later, or you can watch it as it happens. Either way, there you go. The Supreme Court, interestingly, was looking at a very narrow piece of the entire broadcast issue. Obviously, the network said, wait a minute, you're rebroadcasting our stuff and you're not paying us. We don't like not being paid. Knock it off. And took it up. Various lower courts opined various different ways. The Supreme Court handed down their decision not too long ago. Wasn't it this summer?
Yeah.
And the Supreme Court, interestingly to lawyers, but arguably not to you guys, actually was deciding whether it was direct infringement. In the past, the Napster generations of cases were usually indirect infringement. Basically, if I supply the means to you for you to go infringe copyrights, then I'm on the hook for contributory and you're on the hook for direct. So it's direct and indirect. We can just use the easier words. Now, academic folks would love to talk for hours about the distinctions and why one is more interesting than the other, and was this really viable? The Supreme Court took the hard question, and that has to do with things that TJ understands way better than I do as to who appealed which part of which ruling. But in front of the Supreme Court, instead of the easy question, which was, is this contributory infringement? The answer would be yes. Is this direct infringement? Which is a little harder because really they were not making copies exactly. You were having the copy made with their equipment. So it's an easy contributory style case, but it's a harder direct infringement case. Where the Supreme Court went was to the definition of transmit, which is part of the definition of perform, which is an exclusive right to a copyright holder. So the broadcast networks have the exclusive right to perform their copyrighted material, and by perform we mean transmit and show. And when the 76 Act, our current copyright law, was being passed, it was as cable companies were first coming up. And they were doing pretty much exactly what Aereo has been doing, which is taking the broadcast network stuff and retransmitting it to people so they can get it. A lot of times it's out in rural areas that didn't get TV yet, because if you didn't have a huge antenna, my grandmother had this ginormous thing on the top of her house in Alabama that you had to basically move it for which station you wanted with this little gizmo on top of the TV. And literally the antenna moved, and you had to have the ginormous thing on the top of your house if you weren't in the city or the suburbs to get broadcast television. Some places were even more remote than that, and that's really where cable, as was starting up was they would have the big ass antenna, and they would then transmit or run through cables, the programming to the houses. At the time, cable channels were not really doing their own. There weren't cable channels when it first started out. It really was rebroadcasting the network stuff. Y'all have probably at least seen Wayne's World or heard of it. That was funny, for those of you who are significantly younger than I am, because that's what public access cable was. Wayne's World actually would have been a fairly good example of a public access cable show. And that's what it was. There weren't real cable shows. They canceled the show before I got to be on it. I had a role as the chick in the sparkly dress in a show called Combat Cooking, which was an ex-Green Beret who basically hacked things up with a machete. And a girlfriend and I were supposed to show up in our little spangly dresses and, you know, basically be the TNA for the show many years ago.
You know I'm never going to forget this.
And sadly, even cable had some standards, and the Combat Cuisine show was canceled before it aired. But that was cable. You know, we were not talking Showtime and all of the original programming that we have now. The bajillion channels, nothing on concept didn't exist then. It was four channels, nothing on. But so cable then was doing what basically Aereo is doing now. And so the Supreme Court looked at it and said, yeah, when Congress wrote this law, they were addressing this new thing of cable and saying, okay, it was unclear under the previous law what, if any, problem that would cause under copyright law. So we're making it clear now. They can't do that. And then they went on and added a whole bunch of regulatory stuff, because it's Congress and that's what they do, about how cable companies would pay the broadcast networks, basically. And it's a compulsory license. The details of it are beyond my knowledge. But basically, the cable companies, once they're a cable company, the deal is fixed for how much they pay the networks. They don't have to go and negotiate for each channel or any of that nonsense. It's fixed by Congress. They pay it. They sign up. They move on. Broadcast networks get some money, cable companies use the broadcast stuff. No problem. When you get those little notices from your cable company saying, oh, you better call ESPN because they're going to not allow us to show their stuff because they're charging too much money, snip, 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 back and forth. That's cable channels. The broadcast stuff is settled. And so Aereo just decided they didn't want to pay the broadcast cable. They had this great idea and this new technology. And they obviously had some attorneys who had read some cases, and they thought by doing the individual little antenna that they weren't going to get caught under the kind of Napster umbrella problem. They got caught under a different problem by the Supreme Court, who said, transmit. It's part of perform. Perform is an exclusive right. You can't do that without permission. The broadcast networks didn't give you permission. You're done. And that's kind of the case. The dissent. So, I mean, reasonable minds can differ, or at least Supreme Court minds can differ, because we have, three-person dissent. So it's a 6-3, it's a 6-3 opinion. At least three of the justices bought what Aereo was saying, and they said that the majority was making up this like a cable channel rule and set that up as a straw man and tried to say how, oh, this is horrible, now we'll never know what the law is. Yeah, as if they don't obscure it on a daily basis. But so the dissent tried to tear apart this like a cable company thing. But what the majority was doing, I'll put my cards out, I think correctly, was saying that's what this law was written for. Now, whether the law is a good thing or not, that's a different discussion. But that's not for the court to decide. That's for Congress to address. And the court said this is pretty much what this law was written about. And since this is pretty, the only difference is they're, you know, doing it on a cloud rather than through buried cables. And that's not a legal difference, necessarily. And so we don't buy that the fact that it's in a cloud rather than a cable makes a difference. This is the same issue. The law has already been set. No, you can't do that. If you're a cable company, you have to go sign up as a cable company and pay the set fees. Which, ironically, I have just read, Aereo has now said, oh, we're a cable company. And so they're hoping to be able to use the compulsory licenses rather than having to go negotiate with the very networks that they just spent a lot of money suing back and forth. So perhaps the negotiations there would be a little strained. So they don't want to have to negotiate a deal with the networks. They're now saying, oh, we're a cable company. Yes, we are. Compulsory license, please. And, you know, we'll see how that goes. So that's kind of the case in a somewhat windy nutshell. The copyright law is, you know, does evolve over time, the way it's supposed to work is that the court looks at what the law is and applies it how it's written. Now, this is, you know, in the perfect world, and there are unicorns. And they apply what the law is. If the result is something that Congress, who in my unicorn world represent people, think is a bad thing, then they will change the law, and the Supreme Court would then apply whatever the new law is. But the law as it stands is what it is. And in my reading of the law and the case, I think the majority is correct. It's transmission, it's performance. You got to have permission. You got to go, if you can, you can go through the compulsory license setup. That's kind of where I came on it.
Yeah. So one question you might be wondering sitting here is, well, what does this case have to do with me? Right? Especially if maybe you didn't use Aereo because it was only, you know, broadcast channels were available. Anyway, this is sort of a niche market that a service a lot of people might not use. So sort of like, what's the bigger impact of it? Why do we want to sit here at a con where we could be talking about science fiction and dressing up in more exciting costumes and talk about some legal issue? And the issue comes with how this is going to affect follow-on technologies and your experience getting information and streaming content from the cloud and from other potential services. So let's start with like an analogy. Like back in 1984, the Supreme Court was trying to decide whether the VCR would be a legal technology. And back then, the broadcast channels were like, this is going to destroy everything. There'll be no more TV. We can't let this happen. No one's going to buy anything from us anymore. No commercials are going to want to run on it, run on broadcast television. And this Supreme Court 5-4, it's like a really close case, said, no, actually, you know, for complicated reasons, VCR, legal to sell. And then from that, we get video rental stores, we get different kinds of technology that, you know, we start off with the Betamax, then we get the VCR, so we get advances in technology. And so by allowing this, this alternative business model, we get some cool stuff. So what happens with Aereo is that there's a potential for it to cut off other kinds of innovation in terms of, you know, how people are going to use and access content. You know, the key thing about Aereo was you didn't have to watch the TV on your TV. You could stream it to your iPad or to your laptop or whatever. And that was sort of opening up a potential for, like, other ways for people to be able to access content. And the way the Supreme Court decided the decision is going to like change the market going forward for a couple of reasons. One is not just the exact details of the decision, but the fact that, like Courtney was saying, they kind of made this decision in a, well, it looks like cable, and so this shouldn't be allowed. And I actually think this is problematic from like the way they made the decision, because I'd say previously most of these decisions came down to these very kind of formalistic distinctions that were very, you know, they don't necessarily hold a lot of sway in terms of your kind of like moral reaction to what's happening, but they made the law more clear. So this question over whether Aereo was performing or whether the person that was sitting there who was using the service when they clicked play was performing the work makes the difference over whether Aereo was liable. And before, it really very often came down to which person pressed the button. And in some sense, you're like, well, who cares? But you know, the fact that that was the thing that made the decision made the law much clearer. And the problem with this, like a cable company way that the majority came down, is that it makes less clear what future potential businesses are going to be legal and illegal. And that might have a negative effect on what technologies we see coming out because, you know, Amazon and Google, they're going to take a case to the Supreme Court. But some sort of small company that's like, oh, well, I have this idea. I need to get funding, I need someone to back me, they might not be able to get that kind of investment if the, you know, your venture capitalist or your, you know, random rich guy is like, well, what are the chances that, you know, we're going to get, you know, having to spend $500,000 in litigation to decide whether your business is even legal, right? So the downside of this decision, in my mind, is the way it was decided, which makes the law less clear and thus discourages cool, innovative business models. And, you know, I think that's really the worst outcome. And I, you know, I, you know, getting a little bit into the text, I think the way the law was written came out the way the dissent was, and that, you know, Justice Scalia wrote the dissent, and he hates legislative history. He's like, We don't know what Congress meant. Half the people that voted on this didn't read it. Like, yeah. You know, if you can appeal to the spirit of the statute, which is kind of what the majority was saying. Like, well, this was meant to make cable companies have to pay a license fee, and so we're going to make that happen. Or you can look at the text and be like, okay, technically, who is performing, who is pushing the button? And the dissent was like, listen, the latter is what the text says. It's not about the spirit, it's about the text. And if Congress says we got it wrong, they should go back and fix it. So anyway, what does this matter to you? I think it's a worry about what kind of technologies we're going to see in the future and what kind of stuff we won't see. Not because it's necessarily illegal, but just because it's not clear enough that maybe the company won't even get off the ground because they won't be able to get the investment or the backers to do it.
I think that those are good points. I think that definitely the Supreme Court, whenever the Supreme Court makes a decision about technology, you can guarantee they're going to get it wrong. The Sandy Baymax case was interesting in that they decided that VCRs, or as they call, what was it, VTRs, videotape recorders.
Yeah.
They weren't even called VCRs yet. And by the way, it was a Betamax case, not even a VHS tape case. So in the beginning days of it, they came up with one of the justifications that it would be okay to basically copy. I mean, when you looked at it, this was a copy of a copyrighted material. So on its face, what was at issue in Sony was pretty clearly an infringement. They decided it was a fair use and it was okay. One of the justifications they used was that, well, no one's going to keep a library of this stuff. No one's going to watch these shows more than once. They're just time-shifting their viewing. And that was the phrase they kept using, was time-shifting. So that they said, oh, this technology will never be used for people to have libraries of shows or films.
They didn't say that. They said that like, as long as some uses will be non-infringing, the technology's okay. It wasn't like no one will ever do this. It was like some people won't do that.
I read it the other way. They were convinced that this was time shifting. That was how they held. I mean, I think at the end, Sony was correct. I think that was what we wanted from a business standpoint. But I think that everything they believed about how it was going to evolve was wrong. They were right for the wrong reasons. And I think that watching your own shows that you've recorded is a fair use. I think that's good. You were allowed even then to make a cassette tape of your albums so you could play it in your car. So making a recording of something that you're allowed to watch for your own use, yeah, fair use, we're good. And Sony shouldn't be liable for any infringement because we have uninfringing uses. Sure, there are some that are infringing, but there are plenty that aren't. Sony's fine. But when they try to guess about technology, they are, well, frankly, as bad as Congress. And it's hard to guess in advance where things are going to go with respect to technology, and that's not their job. Their job is to say, here's the law. Okay, Congress, you guess and get it wrong. We're not going to today. And that's where, I mean, I guess that's where we differ on it. I think that the majority was correct, because I think that calling it like a cable company is really undermining the validity of their argument, which is the definition of transmit, which is what these guys were pretty much doing. But to a certain point, that's the legal stuff that's not interesting, except to us. We could probably get into a fistfight over it if we really wanted to. But no, sorry, not going to happen. But so you have but it comes back down to how then do you allow for the innovation? I think that's what you were getting with your question. Obviously, it's not, I mean, legally in my mind, there's not a distinction between uses cables and doesn't use cables. But we have a whole new flood of technology, and fitting copyright law around it often is difficult. Frankly, this isn't the worst example of how bad copyright law is when it comes to trying to nail down pieces of technology.
There's this one of the oldest XKCD comics is just, it's like number 17 or something, his little stick figure sitting under a tree, and it's like, some days I just am too tired to get like angry about outraged over copyright law.
Exactly. Notebook that I teach out of.
Right. I guess we should probably like let you guys talk, but you know the last thought is TiVo. TiVo's just come out with like Aereo, but just in your home. Right, so like they give you the antenna and the DVR, and it lets you do exactly what Aereo is doing, but because technically, you know, and they have it to give to you in your home, and they're like, well, this is legal, and you're like, what is the difference? And the difference is like the length, literally the length of the cord.
Well,
and
that's very important to see. The problem is that I think that this does make the law clearer, and I think that it's perfectly in line with the other technology decisions that have been made. The It is fairly well settled, and I'll say fairly well settled because there's nothing really that puts technology and copyright that's ever going to be completely settled, but fairly well settled that putting a copy of a program into your computer memory, not even stored on the hard drive, but as you run it through your computer memory, is making a copy. Mm-hmm. That when you create something on a machine, it is a tangible copy, and we're going to call it a copy. So the issue here is, I mean, think back to the day when you had your big dial thing and the antenna on your house. You could still go put a big honking antenna on your house and get all these broadcast channels you want. But we don't want that big honking antenna on our house, and so we wanted an aereo. And I also wanted to watch it on my tablet instead of my TV, so I wanted aereo. But the problem is that it's perfectly legal to put the big honking antenna on my house and be the receiver of the network content. It's perfectly legal to put an antenna in my DVR that's tied into my set in my living room and receive the broadcast content in my house, because broadcasting to my house is the very definition of what broadcast TV does. The problem here was that they broadcast it to somebody else's house, and then they sent me a copy. Mm-hmm. Even though I had bought an antenna and put it at my friend's house, my friend recorded it and sent it to me. That's nothing more than a transmission. That can't be anything but a transmission. And that's entirely what the law prohibits, mm-hmm. is that performance, that transmission of the data. So you put it in my house, it's not a question of pushing the button, it's a question of where does the button go?
The button, or where is it talking to?
If I'm in my house and I receive the network signal, that's the purpose of network television. But if I'm in my house and someone else receives the network signal, that's copyright.
That's a retransmission. Now, whether that should be an infringement or not, that's the Congress question.
But it's the
same.
And
that's what they decided with cable, because cable was doing that initially. They were just collecting the signal and letting people have what, if they had a big enough antenna, they could get anyway. Okay. So Congress, when they made the decision about making cable not allowed to do that, it was the same thing. They were just taking what was freely available and making it easier and more convenient for people to get.
So I think this gets into like the thing that we kind of didn't want to bore everyone with, which was those like nuances of like what the rules technically are and what the statute says. And so but you know, the what is the difference between cable and aereo? And so the argument would have been, and I'll try to do this as like in the neutral way, because I know Courtney and I tend seem to disagree on this, but the question was that the majority said, like, we're not going to, this doesn't matter because it's like a cable company, was whether, so like cable was pushing the signals to your home, and you know, you turned on the TV or you didn't, but like the signals were still going. Whereas in the aereo case, nothing was coming to your home unless you, the user at home, push buttons or typed whatever in to say, oh, send me that. And so the majority in the case is like, you know, your user experience is the same. This is a distinction without a difference. And the dissent was saying, you know, this is that like formalistic distinction that puts something on one side or the other, and it's important that we follow those rules. And you know, one is because that's what the statute is, two is because the more you can anticipate beforehand what technologies are going to be legal and illegal, the better for business and innovation and whatever, so people have like clearer instructions about what they can and can't do. So I mean, this is why I think it's, you know, I'm more sympathetic to the idea that who pushes the button makes the difference. And you know, if you're talking about, you're still performing privately if you press play on your own DVR. And so it doesn't seem to have a basis in the statute whether or not that DVR is at your neighbor's house or at your house. Because if you say, hey, send me that signal, then you're privately, in the sense that like the whole public can't watch it, you're privately performing the show, which you're allowed to do.
I think logically that's a very appealing argument. And I think that's one of the reasons Scalia made it. I think that's mm-hmm. why you're going with it. I think it's logically appealing. And I don't think there's anything wrong with it, except that it's not what the statute says. The statute defines transmission. And it may be basically you have to come down in this case on whether you think the important distinction is who pushes the button, or if you think the important distinction is where the signal is being captured. Neither of these really makes a big difference in the end. Whether I push the button or someone else pushes the button for me, whether it is captured at the top of the hill and sent downhill to me, or whether the antenna is on my house, at the end of the day, we're doing the same thing. we're recording shows off of broadcast television. Unfortunately, the law is in the middle of that, and it depends on which part of the statute you think makes more sense. I think that the where the transmission comes rule is just as clear as who pushes the button, especially since there's not always a button. And who's pushing it becomes, you can make that as muddy as you want to. I mean, that can be done as well. So you have two different ways to look at the same issue. And, you know, like I said, the Supreme Court can differ. We differ on it. Yeah. And the bottom line is, since they had six justices going that way, now the rule is not who pushes the button, but where's the transmission coming from. And with this one also, unless, I mean, I guess if they found another fair use, we'd be okay, but the contributory negligence argument is even stronger. It's odd that it only came up on a direct infringement. But the Supreme Court can only decide the issue in front of it, even if there's other ones that would make it easier. Sometimes when there's multiple issues in front of them, they get to dodge the hard issue and they take the easy one and say, oh, we've decided this really easy issue over here. So look at us getting away from that hard one that we don't want to touch. In this case, there was just one issue in front of them, so it's the one they decided. Well, and if Aereo now can go and make themselves a cable company, then now you have the business model for this kind of technology to move forward. You can be accepted as a cable company, sans cables, and get the compulsory license. Otherwise, they're making money off of broadcasts that they don't own. And at the end of the day, they're putting themselves in the middle between the consumer and the networks, which Congress already decided companies weren't allowed to do before.
Should we start going
Go ahead.
People?
In a Spock shirt. Oh, okay. We have people ready to talk instead of listening to us talk. Is the microphone coming forth?
Can you hear me?
Oh, good heavens, no. That's the microphone.
Yeah.
That is insane.
It's very noticeable.
Well, we will know where the microphone is.
So one of the questions I have, now that the court has also ruled, I think in the past 2 or 3 weeks, that Aereo cannot get a compulsory license.
Oh, did they decide that? I hadn't heard that.
Yeah.
The lower court?
Oh,
it was a lower court.
Preliminary. They're not done yet.
Okay. So let's say they do continue down that path. What does that do to the, or I guess what recourse does that give Aereo in terms of why the Supreme Court ruled the way they did in terms of them being able to operate?
So if they don't get the compulsory license, that means they would need to negotiate with the copyright owners to the networks to be able to continue to have their service. And that would have to be like a voluntary transaction. So the other side would have to be like, yes, you pay us this much money, then you can do it. Probably in this case, no. But, you know, there was Jack Valenti was, before the Sony Betamax case came down, was saying this will kill broadcast. And then later on, we're all going to die. But then later he said, we never wanted to destroy the VCR. We just wanted to license it, right? Like, you know, is it about control or do you just want to cut? Who knows? I don't know. But, you know, maybe. So, you know, I don't know enough about their inner psychology, which way they would want to come down.
I would assume that it would certainly be better for Aereo if they can go under the compulsory system. It'll be cheaper and easier for them. If they have to negotiate with the networks, well, you know, the networks really, they're kind of pissed right now, but, you know, he came around. I think they all will once there's dollars on the table, and Aereo probably won't get quite as good a deal as the compulsory license, but the networks are in this for profit, and if they have a smidgen of intelligence, which they have occasionally shown recently, they will say, well, gosh, here's another way to keep making money off of our old technology. So, yeah, sure, let's license it to you because it doesn't really harm them any and they can make money off of the situation. I would be surprised if they didn't find a way to come to an agreement. Next.
So the question I have is more with respect to sort of the TiVo model where you have a physical device in your house. If you have a device in your house and you're listening to signals, and then your friend has another device in your house listening to signals, and instead of sort of transmitting the data back and forth across lines of any kind, you're plugging in an SD card type thing and just sneakernetting it back and forth, is that still a transmission?
It's a copy. But anything you put, anything you record it onto is a copy. And there are certain copies you're allowed to make under copyright law, and there are certain copies that you're not allowed to make under copyright law. Now, every one of those is going to be a copy. The thing on the TiVo is a copy. The thing on the other TiVo is a copy. The thing on the SD card from the TiVo is a copy.
The thing on your Betamax was a copy.
Right.
But it's an allowed copy.
Right. There are certain home recording privileges and certain time-shifting privileges that the copyright law has allowed the end user. And those apply to you and your TiVo and your, no one has cassette tapes anymore, but your MP3s, those are all
track tapes.
Yes. those vinyl. Those were all the perfectly allowable copies. They're still copies. They're still technically under the most minute reading of the law of an infringement, but they're an allowed copy. They're not infringing because you're okay to do that under the law as it stands. Aerial wasn't okay to do this under the law as it stands because that was specifically what the law said you can't do.
It's also really important to point out that the copyright right for playing the thing, so performing it, is it has to be a public performance to infringe on someone's exclusive right. So the reason they wanted to get Aereo was because since they like say, hey, anyone who wants to use our services, is that was they were making it available to the public. Whereas if you have a antenna in your house or your friend, even if your friend does and then shares it with you, that's considered a private performance. You're not saying, hey, guys, anyone come in, give me a buck, watch TV. That would be like opening your house to the public. But whatever you and your friend are doing is going to be, like when you play something, that's private because you're only showing it to like you and your friends or you and your family or whatever. So that's just never going to be reached. And like TJ was saying, it's not super clear what the limits are legally in terms of your personal use.
Private? How many friends do you actually have? Your Facebook, you had all of your Facebook friends in to watch a movie, it's public. If you had just people you actually know in, at some point, depending on how popular they are, all of my friends could get in the room, we could all sit on the couch, and we could, and that would be a private showing. Somewhere between that and, TJ's Facebook. Somewhere between there, it becomes public. Where? When the judge tells you.
But the thing is, a lot of these cases don't get decided because, because they can't see what you're doing in your house if it's not, visible on a network or whatnot. No one knows what you're doing in your house. And so that's why there isn't an on-point decision about whether keeping a library of cassette tapes is fair use or not. Because in the Betamax decision, they said time shifting is fair use. That's good enough. And it looked like they would have said no, is my guess. But they actually didn't say whether keeping a library of videos that you had recorded was fair use or not. And that never went up because no one ever sued like one individual sitting in his house that had five tapes in his library.
Or 500, like my college roommate did. She didn't get sued. Good thing, too. But so some of those cases are never brought. Sometimes it's a getting away with it thing. I know a number of small cons in the Southeast that always show Rocky Horror. They don't have a license. That's a public showing. No question about it. But since there was 200 people at the whole con, no one knew, no one cared. Doesn't make it legal. Just means, it's like speeding. It's when do you get caught.
Right.
And with copyright, you have the extra level of not just when do you get caught, but when do you get caught and when does the content owner care?
Right.
And so, some people who are doing this are what in the legal profession we refer to as judgment proof, meaning too poor to sue. And sometimes especially with music, y'all have heard about them doing the industry will do test cases anyway, not test cases, but we'll make an example out of you and just absolutely ruin some poor college kid's life by suing him for the MP3s on his computer. Normally that kind of thing you think will fly under the radar and no one care. The music industry made a decision to say, ha ha ha, we do care. Boy, that helped their goodwill, didn't it? And stopped us from pirating music. But the TV industry has not yet done that. They haven't gone after the VHS libraries. I'm assuming they're not going after any digital libraries either. But at some point, your private showing becomes public. It's one of the times where that line is not clear. I think we have another question. The holder of the box.
I have the cue.
That is the strangest mic.
Yes, isn't it?
I feel like it's the conch shell.
Like you can like pull it out straight.
It's throwable.
A throwable mic.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to see it thrown then. I don't want it passed gently.
Yeah.
I want it thrown.
Okay. I'll
I'll throw it
after I'm
tossed
done.
Tossed gently.
Great when lawyers tell somebody to throw something.
I know, isn't it?
Do not at.
Everyone sign a waiver.
So I wanted to do what lawyers hate, and that is get into a philosophical discussion.
I love philosophical discussions.
Yeah, I know you would. It's sort of
so
like,
I hate it.
Yes, exactly. I'm about to describe why you two can't stand
later.
Each other. So
I'm gonna forget that one either.
What you're doing is it sounds like the argument that you're making is sort of you're trying to find an excuse to justify your underlying belief, And over here, I hear you saying, okay, this is what the law says. And you're saying, but look, there's consequences. Mm-hmm. So there's a consequentialistic view, and there's a absolute realistic view, I suppose, for lack of a better term. And so then to try to make it into a legal argument, you say, oh, well, is it who pushes the button? Oh, well, is it who receives the transmission? Is it? Okay. So all that just sounds like mumbo jumbo to try to avoid having the real discussion, which is, what is it you're actually after? Do you trust Congress, which none of us trust Congress, do you trust Congress?
If any of you do trust Congress, come to me afterwards. I have some investments to sell you.
But what you're advocating almost is, do you trust Congress to then go do the right thing after the Supreme Court makes a decision, instead of the Supreme Court being activist on it? Or do you think, look, screw that, just let the Supreme Court make an activist decision because it's going to be the right thing to do long term?
Oh, but see, that assumes that what the Supreme Court does would be right.
Right.
But
you don't want to assume.
Well, see,
that.
Exactly.
The whole point.
Philosophize away.
I'm going to start that one on a federalist standpoint. The reason we do it the way we do is because, in theory, Congress is at least somewhat responsive to the individuals because they are elected. The Supreme Court is appointed for life, which is intended to separate them from us, because they shouldn't have to care about whether what they do is popular. They have to care about whether what they do is the law. And an activist court is now writing laws, which is Congress's job, and they're not elected. That's why it's set up the way it is. And so Congress is supposed to pass the laws. They do a bloody poor job of it. But, you know, gridlock is usually our friend, because that keeps them from passing more laws, and fewer laws, in my mind, generally are better. There's a whole lot of money going into lobbying on all kinds of sides of all of these issues. And, you know, sometimes right in your congressman matters. One thing that people don't understand about Congress is that lobbyists are not just bad guys. We think of, oh, those lobbyists. Well, congressmen are clearly no smarter than any of us are. And they don't know a lot about everything because they can't. They have to pass laws and everything from timber to this stuff. Well, that's why the lobbyists go in and educate them on the issues. If you talk to congressmen, they actually say, I have to rely on the lobbyists because what do I know about pine beetles? But yet you want me to pass a law about it. So I have guys from the timber industry that come and educate me on it. And then they tell me what they want. And the lobbyists who are successful educate the congressmen and then persuade them. Now, obviously, they're going to give slanted facts even, but the congressmen don't listen to the guys that just try to pitch them a sales bill. They listen to the guys that give them help and then try to pitch their bill. And that's how most of it works. And that's what, I mean, EFF does a great job of going out and trying to educate and lobby, frankly, with the congressmen, try to educate them as to why what they're doing is stupid in many cases. There's no way to do that with the Supreme Court. So if you want them to be activists, you're asking for these nine people fairly removed from reality to make the decision without any of that somewhat messy, somewhat money-driven, completely less than perfect input, but at least that's there. There's no element for that in the Supreme Court.
I think one of the things that hinges on what you said is we shouldn't wait for Congress to do the right thing. I mean, the idea that, oh, the court did this, so let's wait and hope Congress gets it right. No, go now write your congressman and say, hey, I really want an area, and I think that you should let me have one, so go pass a new law. I mean, if you want one, tell somebody. I don't know that it'll change their mind, but you're not going to change their mind by sitting around waiting for them to figure
read
it out.
Read your mind and care.
So if you want Congress to act properly, go tell them what you want. Be active. Be involved in the process. They are there for you.
They come home to their home districts, especially the guys in the House. They get reelected every 2 years, so they are always running for reelection. If you start showing up at their office and talk to them, sometimes you'll get the senators.
But if you show up too much, they'll just carry you away.
Yeah. Show up politely. Right. Don't chain yourself to anything. But they actually will, okay, at the very least, they'll smile politely while they ignore you, but oftentimes they'll listen. I mean, the House districts aren't that big. I'm not going to really blow smoke up and tell you that this will, you know, oh, go convince your congressman, you can change the world. Oh, that'd be cute, but ride a unicorn to his office and you'll be fine. But the concept is still there, and they do listen to some stuff. They change their mind based on what they hear. This, because, I mean, something like Aereo is not one that either party has any particular dogma on. No one really has a dog per se in that fight, really, because it's, you know, a recorder. Who cares? So they don't. This isn't one you. You're going to run up against the same dogmatic partisan thing. If you try to convince a Democrat to lower taxes or a Republican to raise them, yeah, good luck with that. But on an issue like this, they might listen. But the Supreme Court can't.
Gosh, there's so many cool things that can be said from your question and from these comments, and I've been trying to like take notes on all of them. So first, you know, the problem with the phrase activist judges is very often someone says that a judge is activist when they made a decision they didn't like, right? And so, you know, when someone's truly just been like, well, the law says this pretty clearly, but screw it, I want to do something else. That we could call activism. But I think often it's much more complex. And so, you know.
I would not call the dissent here activist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think their reading is the weaker of the two, but even though I disagree, I wouldn't say that was activism per se.
So I'm going to say that the dissent's view isn't results oriented. So I'm going to read the part of the transmit clause that I think it explains why who pushes the button is really important. So it says, you know, one of the definitions of performing a copyrighted work publicly is to transmit or otherwise communicate a performance of the copyrighted work to the public. ... more details. So this to the public line is really important, because if Aereo's performing, they're saying, hey, everyone, come. That's to the public. But if it's the person sitting in their living room who's the person performing, they're just performing for their living room. And that's private performance, which would then be outside of the definition. So it, you know, this comes down to really like how you want to read the statute. And so, you know, I think the way to describe the difference between sort of Courtney and the majority's preferred position and mine in the dissents is that the majority and Courtney say, you know, we're looking at the spirit of the statute. What were they trying to do when they wrote this?
No,
whereas
I disagree with that.
But the like a cable company isn't talking about the words, though. It's sort of just like,
Who pushes the button isn't in the statute?
But it is, because it's to the public. No, because it's they are transmitting. But the point is, depending on who is transmitting, it is to the public or to a private group. And that's why who pushes the button matters. Because if it is the person performing in their living room, then it's not a copyright infringement. So anyway, it comes down to like that textual analysis. So we even disagree about why we disagree.
Yeah, we can't even agree on how we're coming down a different side of it.
And the last thing is, you know, there's sort of a bipartisan consensus in Congress that more copyright is better because everyone likes the movie industry. Because Republicans like property, and they're like, well, intellectual property is like property, even though it's kind of not. And Democrats like the movie industry and the entertainment industry, and they want more robust laws. And so it's really, I think, an uphill battle for groups like the Electronic Frontier Foundation and, you know, people that are like more in the tech industry that see some of the problems that really strong copyright law can create for those business models, to kind of like wedge their feet in and be like, hey guys, this is a legitimate, you know, position. These are big issues. You should look at it from this other perspective. I feel like you asked some big question about like what the big picture was.
Is your undercurrent desire driving your legal definition?
No, because I really don't care whether Aereo goes or not.
This though.
I don't have a dog in this fight. When I read it, I have to confess, I kind of went back and forth. I usually think Scalia's opinions are very well reasoned. When I saw his was the dissent, I kind of assumed that he would convince me that he was right. I was really surprised that he didn't, because I thought that his, oh, they're just saying like a cable company argument, I thought was a stupid argument, frankly. I thought he was making a straw man and destroying it, because like a cable company is not what the majority said. They said it's a transmission to the public. And I think what it really comes down to is whether the transmission from Aereo's, it's your own antenna, to your living room or not is to the public. And in my mind, if Aereo's taking your money and sending something to you, it's not a family or a friend. You're a customer. Customers are public. That's a public transmission. And they're transmitting from their central place to lots of people's homes. Well, there's an individual antenna in within that place. I don't see that matters. They're capturing signals. They're sending them out to lots of people. The fact that they're sending different things to each people doesn't matter. They're making a public transmission. That's what it really comes down to, because you view it as
it comes
the
into
individual
who's the they.
Person.
Because they don't send it. Sorry. Because they don't send it unless the person who wants to see it says, send it to me. And so the question is, who's the sender? Do you see that as Aereo, or do you see that as...
Yeah.
And, you know, it's... Because it's an automatic process. And if they had said, you know, as TiVo is now doing, okay, in your house, here's your antenna, here's your DVR, and you're doing the same thing versus, okay, here's your antenna, here's your DVR, and it's in our warehouse, and then there's a long cable that ends up going to your house, you know, is that different? And I think, you know, legally the answer is no. Your question was, does our underlying biases influence the way that we come to opinions? And, you know, the truth is most intellectually honest people try not to let it. And of course, you know, we're all humans and maybe it does. So I think it doesn't. And sometimes I'm like, yeah, you know, I don't like that result, but that's what the statute requires. And this one, Scalia convinces me. And, you know, if you look, you know, this wasn't, the dissent's position was the one that won in the district court and in the appellate court. Right. So it's not just like, what is this crazy thing?
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's not coming out of nowhere. Yeah. This is one that both sides have reasoned arguments. And one way or another, it comes down to, okay, do you see it this way or that way? And which way seems to make more sense? And it's either and even though the argument of, oh, it's like a cable company is unclear, well, it's either like a cable company or it's not like a cable company. It's either like these things or not like these things, because there's not a statute that says Aereo can do this or Aereo can't do this. So you have to figure out where in the Copyright Act Aereo fits.
And just to be clear, I think, you know, your question kind of presumes that, you know, our panelists are coming to conclusions based on our philosophy. That's the litigation process right there.
Yeah.
What you just saw is exactly what happened at every level of the court.
And the judges listened and
right.
Were
somebody has a position and somebody else has another position. Yeah. And often one position is grounded in this is what the law is, and the law is very, very on my side. And the other position is, but this is what the facts are, and the facts are very, very different here. And it is a results-oriented argument. This is the litigation process, and this is how it all got in front of the judge. And the results-oriented argument was absolutely made, and sure. Some judges bought it, three of them, and some judges
I've
didn't.
I strongly resist that this is results-oriented, because like I'm reading from the statute that it says you need to transmit a performance to the public, and the person who is
so
performing it is
disagreeing on what's public.
No, it's that if Aereo is the person is the subject, then they are performing to the public. But if the person in the living room is performing, they are performing to their own private living room, and that's where it goes. And mm-hmm. Like, what is that's the distinction? And that's a question from the text. What counts as that?
She's been waiting.
Well, I was just going to say, next year we'll do this with the mud wrestling pit out front.
Jello wrestling. Okay.
I'll bring my speed.
You've been waiting. We're waiting for
you. Okay. I actually have a question about the results, which I almost don't want to put in out. But
a natural, practical question? I don't know.
Okay. My sure question is, because at this point I was a little confused, and now I'm a lot confused.
We did the job.
That looking at the potential disaster of what happened with the VCR, which, you know, because of how the Supreme Court decided, everybody made money. Which do you, ultimately, I'm not clear on what you think would have been a better result for future technology, whether the way the Supreme Court decided or the way that the dissenters wanted to go, which one would have had,
better for the rest of the
right,
world.
Right, yeah. Better for the potential of
technology
this type of technology. Yeah.
That's a very tricky question, because I mean, we need a crystal ball to say what the future is going to bring. Okay. But not only that, it's easy to say that if you just have no laws, people can do whatever they want and technology will advance. But oftentimes, technology advances more by trying to get around the restrictions that we have. So when you say that you can't do this, okay, well, I can't do that. So what can I do? Yeah. What can I change it? And instead of just having Aereo and it's one service, well, now we've got the TiVo service and it's different. And you're going to try something different again. And every time there's some new restriction, you change it to some new process. So it's not like one automatically increases technology and one automatically discourages technology. That
the
being said,
consequences are strong.
Right. That being said, obviously, very restrictive copyright laws prevent certain things. And excuse me one second. Guys, knock it off.
Those are kids.
My wife's at another panel. I can bring the kids with me. So that's the. I mean, to say that necessarily one is better than the other, or one is more results oriented than the other, it's not necessarily the case. I mean, what we got out of the VCR case was that that's okay. So we did that, and we all used that, and that was fine.
Now we have new stuff.
But right, maybe we would have gotten to what we have now much quicker if we had to get around a restriction so you couldn't do that.
I'll wear my realist label for another moment here, and I think that honestly it doesn't matter for the big picture. I think that in this case Aereo is going to either be a cable company and get the compulsory license or not. If they have enough funding, they'll negotiate with the networks. If they don't get the compulsory license, and they'll find a way to do it legally, or they won't, but TiVo has already done something else, and someone else will do something else within these rules. I mean, I still think that Aereo very intentionally designed their individual antennas to get around, or to stay within, depending on how you want to say it, the laws as they were. Well, okay, that didn't work. Someone else will try something else. Aereo may or may not survive this process. The technology, I think, will go forward, because this isn't intended to stop Aereo, it's intended, I guess, to help the network stay afloat, because that was one of Congress's intentions when they wrote this part of the law. And I know you have an opinion on this.
Yeah, so the main problem with the majority's opinion is that because, you know, the big kahuna in the room was, does streaming services from some kind of like cloud storage get caught up by this, right? So if you upload a video to your Dropbox account and then you stream it to yourself, is then Amazon performing to the public because there's other copies of that somewhere? And the majority says this is our Leica cable test, and so we're not talking about the cloud. We swear up and down that this probably won't affect it, but we're not going to give you a legal reason why it won't. And that kind of promise never, like, yeah, you can't promise in advance that that's not going to happen, especially when most of the next decisions will be made by other judges, and because they didn't kind of hinge it on a legal reason, it's that might not be true. And so by creating an ambiguous rule, I think that's very bad for future technologies, because it makes the law more uncertain and thus discourages some companies from even starting out. You know, as Courtney was saying, like, Aereo existed. Like, why did they have all the little antennas? Because someone sat down, read a bunch of copyright cases, and said, okay, this will work based on my reading of past things. And then the Supreme Court said, no, you were wrong. The more ambiguous the rules are, the more that discourages follow-on innovation. So I think this is a bad decision in that regard. And secondly, you know, there's this fetish of control over one's copyrighted work, because it's scary when someone can do stuff that, you know, with your work that you didn't give permission for. And I think, you know, just like looking at this con, we see that like losing that control can allow like beautiful things to happen. Like everyone wearing costumes, no one got permission to wear them, and yet it's like it's beautiful, and you can see people's creativity and skill like on display. And so, granted, that's very far from this, but you know, I think being okay with like getting rid of a little bit of that control can like lead to beautiful things.
That needs to come from Congress, though, not the court.
But it's
the court
statute.
Is basically trying to apply a 1970s statute to technology that didn't exist then. Congress, if they want to have rules about cloud, need to write some rules about the cloud. And they haven't done it.
We're getting close on time. I'm going to
get
his question. I'm going to ask the final question.
Okay.
Okay, unlike most people in this room, I'm pretty sure I was an Aereo subscriber.
Oh, how many Aereo subscribers? There you go.
Yeah. You know, I'm wrong. Okay.
Not the only one.
As all of you know who are Aereo subscribers, Aereo was retransmitting what was already being done. No one brings a court case for altruistic reasons, at least not a large corporation. They bring it because there's a risk of money or financial loss.
Absolutely.
There's no way that they were going to lose money on this, because even though it was being retransmitted, they make money off the commercials. More people were watching the commercials. Those people could have been added into their, what do you call it, the Nielsens?
Yeah, yeah.
And that would have brought up the number of people that were watching, increased their ad rates, and actually given them more money. Mm-hmm. So they're not losing anything to Aereo. Does it matter really whether I watch it at home through my little flat TV, flat antenna that's connected to my TV, or whether I'm watching it through Aereo? It's the same thing.
I think that you're right, but obviously, as you said, no one brings a lawsuit for funsies. The networks felt otherwise. They felt that letting someone come in and rebroadcast their stuff without paying them something was hurting them. And I think this is where Christina was coming down on control. The networks are accustomed to cable companies having to pay them. Mm-hmm. And they did not like that Aereo was doing the same thing and not paying them. I think your market argument is a sound one. I think that perhaps the networks were stupid to fight against Aereo. It might have helped them by letting it go. But that's where, I mean, good heavens, academics can disagree. Wait till you see economists disagree
right.
on stuff.
Right.
And so they're so obviously the network decided that it did harm them, or they wouldn't have brought the lawsuit. They didn't buy your argument. I think your argument makes some sense. The networks didn't. That's why they sued. They
right.
want Aereo to pay them a license fee.
Yeah,
but that shows they learned nothing from the piano roll case of the 1800s where they sued, where the music company sued over
yeah.
piano rolls because they said they were going to lose money. But in reality,
oh, they're
the
often
piano
wrong,
rolls
but
help
they don't
them.
Buy it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They don't buy your argument of the rising tide lifts all boats. They don't buy that because they brought the suit. That's how we know they don't buy it.
Right. I mean, the reality is they looked at that and said, we already have ad revenue. We're making that anyway. I could also get a licensing fee
yeah.
for all of Aereo's customers,
yeah.
and then I make more money.
Right.
We
so
want
they are making money, and they are losing money
argument.
in their mindset. They're yeah. losing the licensing fee.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a it wasn't a case of, well, this doesn't do anything to us at all, so let's sue anyway. It was we're losing that money.
We
should get that
revenue.
Money, and it
they're
may
stealing
or may
from
not
us.
Work out.
We want our licensing
yeah.
revenue was their motivation.
Cutting the
nose off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, finally. Yeah, I'm a former Aereo customer too. So I started with Aereo after the lower court approved what Aereo was doing, and then I stopped after the Supreme Court came with its final decision. So is there a risk that I could get sued for using Aereo during the period that I used it?
No, because you were privately performing if you were doing anything.
If your copy
you all agree?
If your copy counts as a Sony Betamax copy that's a fair use, then you weren't infringing. But if, in this case, Aereo is infringing, maybe you're infringing also. Now, I'm going to ask you the litigation question. If he only did it during the time that it was legal,
what
can he be sued for breaking the law?
If
you stopped after the Supreme Court said, no, don't do that anymore, but you did it when the lower court said, yes, it's okay, did he break a law?
Yeah, because it wasn't legal. It wasn't decided. It was not willful, necessarily. You could probably have a very good argument that you were not willful because
well, this
you
is
were...
This
no!
Difference in
making it illegal retroactively.
No, the copy on his Aereo DVR was like you making a copy on your DVR or a VCR, so it was probably fair use. You could say, you know, you were literally time shifting.
Yeah.
And then when you watched it, you were transmitting it from the DVR to your living room, but just to your friends and yourself, so that's a private performance, and so you are completely fine, period.
I don't know. Because here's the thing. You look at it this way. Are you...
Welcome to the law.
Right.
Like, this is definitely okay. This is definitely not okay.
Are you a Betamax copy or are you a Napster copy? That's the question. And you know what? There's no answer. So I think you're probably a Betamax copy. And I think
yeah.
you're probably okay. But I think that an argument can be made the other way, and
people
pay me a lot of money to make the argument they want to make,
yeah.
and we see what happens. So now the reality is no one's going to pay a lot of money to sue
yeah.
Scott, because it's not...
Except the music industry.
Except the music industry.
But the music industry is trying to make an example, whereas like a reputable company, like they want Aereo to stop. They know they're just going to piss people off if they start going after customers that believed they were participating
yeah,
in a legal service.
Right. That too.
But everyone knew that Napster wasn't legal, right? And so they were trying to make an example of people that knew they were doing something illegal.
Right.
Whereas like
right.
a reputable company that's not trying to like troll just to like
that's
get
true.
Money
right.
isn't going to sue like the public that believed they were participating in a legal service.
Right.
Okay, so no clear
but
answer.
They won't probably sue you is not necessarily a good way to
say. Let me tell you.
If that's the
so
you
all,
not,
so Christina's
going to
indemnify my...
right. Let me tell you the answer that I give everybody when they ask, can I get sued? Yeah. Yes.
Yes, yes.
You can absolutely get sued for anything,
for
at
anything,
any time, by anyone.
Not.
Exactly. So, right, you might win, but you can
not
get sued.
Not until the judge says so. The litigators win.
Thanks for coming.
Okay, thanks. We'll wrap it up here.
Next time I'm sitting between you two.
This was fun.
We're doing this tomorrow.